One of the simplest ways for companies to communicate financial well-being and shareholder value is to say the dividend check is in the mail or in the ETF or EFT, whatever it's called today. Dividends are those cash distributions that many companies pay out regularly from earnings to shareholders, and they send a very clear and powerful message about future prospects and performance. And a company's willingness and ability to pay steady dividends over time and its power to increase them is often what attracts investors. Now, Brian Cantor, Chief Strategist and Economist at Investec Wealth and Investment and Professor Emeritus at the University of Cape Town, where he was the Dean of the Faculty of Commerce and Head of the School of Economics, wrote a very interesting blog recently on the dividend payout ratio on the Johannesburg Securities Exchange and what this means for investors and the broader economy. Evening, Brian. You obviously had power at the time to write this blog. Before I talk dividends with you, what do you make of the current state of Eskom and how do we get out of this self-induced hole?
Well, it's terribly distressing. It points to really the incompetence with which our economy is being managed. It's just hopeless. So it upsets me as a South African loyalist to see the trouble we got into with Eskom. I'm sure it's a sentiment shared by everybody. It's just extreme disappointment. And the failure really is to recognize the heart of the problem, that Eskom's incompetence is by almost design. The system we've introduced, state ownership, putting the interests of people who work for the state ahead of the consumers of electricity. So a huge patronage system that's developed, a bloated sort of employment role and cost of people being employed and they don't seem to be able to do the job. So solution is the state shouldn't be running electricity, because actually it's proved it can't do so. So that conclusion would seem to be an inevitable one. You've just got to give up on the idea that the state should be running key facilities like electricity supply. There's too much risk in the state running. So you've got to diversify the risk. You've got to bring in private producers of electricity. You've got to bring private businesses running the distribution system. And unless you accept that, we're stuck. I mean, maybe the breaking it up into three parts provides those kinds of opportunities. But of course, the unions will resist because they have an interest, a huge interest in the current system. So then it doesn't serve us. So unless you can deal with that interest, you can't make progress. That interest, the union interest, dominates the outcome. We're in trouble and we stay in trouble.
And it's at the very heart of the economic malaise that we find ourselves in at the moment. You know, the president was down in Cape Town last week at the mining indaba. I listened to him charming the audience in his typical witty and presidential way. He really is a great orator. But all of the woolly rhetoric in the world doesn't make up for the fact that we have very great difficulty in providing a security of power supply. No one's going to invest in long-term capital intensive industries like mining if you can't guarantee power supply. So we have to get it right. And I agree with you. I think solving the labor issue is probably the key stumbling block. But we can be creative here, Brian. We could provide incentives. We could manage that transition by using up surplus capital, perhaps in the UIF fund. I'm just spitballing here, but there are creative solutions.
Well, you can go off-grid. I mean, a mining operation can go off-grid. And I think technology may well be taking us in that direction. That is efficient to provide your own electricity. They do not seem to be any economies of mass production, which is the basis of Eskom's growth originally when they built these huge power stations, because in fact they could deliver electricity at a lower cost per unit. But that may not be the case anymore. Incidentally, we've had a major success in mining. I think one should recognize that. I don't think the president made enough of it. For all the uncertainties about mining policy or policies for mining enterprises in South Africa, Total and its partners went ahead and did the most risky exercise, and that is the exploring for oil, particularly oil and gas, offshore, deep water exploration, expensive and technologically advanced. But they did it, despite all the uncertainty, and they made the discovery. So it seems like a very significant discovery. And now is the opportunity for South Africa to set the terms for the use of the owners of the oil wells, set the terms that are attractive enough to bring the oil ashore and to explore further. So this is a new challenge. Despite the uncertainties, oil and gas has been discovered in significant quantities. Now, provide for the owners an attractive and internationally competitive system, royalties, taxes, whatever, to get this to make the most of this windfall. It's a high-level problem to have.
It's a nice problem to have, but we also have to be mindful of our international competitiveness to balance the royalties and the carry that you're demanding of these exploration projects against the fact that you're not a Middle East. You can't just sink a well and strike gold. You know, it's deep, as you mentioned. It's very difficult terrain, and Total and their partners have managed to navigate that in the Brill Putter discovery. So it's unfortunate that Eskom has been getting all the headlines at the moment. It has seemed to overshadow this find. But Brian, I do want to move on to another issue, and the two are not unrelated. I mean, you found that JSE dividends, that's Aussie dividends per share, have increased significantly faster than earnings over recent years. But before we start that, just explain how companies tend to approach the way they return excess capital to shareholders.
Well, ideally, growth companies don't have excess capital. They have opportunities to employ capital very profitably, earn returns on capital that beat the cost of capital, which is essentially what people could otherwise earn. So if you've got great projects, you've got a great company with a runway of opportunity, then you don't want to pay dividends, you want to raise additional cash. And in addition to the cash you're generating from operations, to grow the business as rapidly as possible and maximize what Joel Stern defined as economic value added. That's his concept.
Yeah.
So it's the amount of capital expenditure you can do multiplied by the difference between the returns on your capital and the opportunity cost of that capital. So then the more, the better. So that's Warren Buffett. You wouldn't have to persuade him. He doesn't pay dividends because he believes, and there's evidence for it, that he can beat the market. In other words, he, by retaining your cash, your cash as a shareholder, he can invest it and generate a return better than you can do on your own. So in a way, dividends really are, in some sense, an admission that you can't do that, that you can't actually earn way above market dividends, so you pay out dividends. And that's valuable to shareholders, who then take the cash, presumably, and not may consume it, or if it's a pension fund, invest it in companies that can be the required rates of return.
That's the essence of markets at the end of the day. You are entrusting your capital to the professionals and the professional stewards of companies to grow that capital at a faster rate than you would be able to earn in a money market.
You want to invest your cash in companies that can beat the cost of capital, that have a highly disciplined process of investing capital, and then companies thrive, and the returns come not from dividends as much as they come from capital growth. The company becomes worth more and more if it can return in excess of the opportunity cost and can find lots of opportunities to invest. Well, that's a tough task.
Well, that is a tough task in a low-growth economy, and that's a number of your piece. I mean, how much faster have dividends increased more than earnings over recent years on the JSE?
Yes, quite significantly faster. So the, So the payout ratio for the JSE as a whole, despite the growth of the importance of Naspers, which is not a great dividend payer, but it's risen from about, let's say, 40-50% of earnings to 60, and if you take out Naspers, it's the order of 70%. So companies are paying out 70% of their earnings for want of investment opportunities, if that makes sense.
That sounds like great news for shareholders. Yay, they're getting more money back from companies in dividends. But in effect, it's an admission by managers that they don't see much opportunity in the South African economy. And if we look at what managers have done to look for growth outside of South Africa, well, I think we could quite easily advise managers to rather stick to their core competencies here in their home market. They haven't been very good at looking for growth ex-South Africa either.
Yes, no, that's exactly. So the glass is half empty because they don't have the investment opportunities and paying out. The glass is half full because if they hold on to that cash, and they would probably waste shareholders' cash, which they have done, unfortunately, with some extraordinary exceptions like in Naspers in the past. They wasted it by investing, presumably on the shareholders' behalf, in offshore ventures that haven't paid off. Now, a South African wealth manager or portfolio manager or South African shareholder can certainly access these days, particularly access opportunities to diversify away from South Africa without the assistance of South African managers who may not be competent and don't seem to be that competent outside of South Africa. So let them stick to what they know, and shareholders can find well-qualified managers of their cash directly outside South Africa. So rather pay out than waste, but ideally invest in growth. Alas, the South African economy is not offering enough opportunities to invest locally, and that's really the challenge.
Yeah.
And it's, again, chicken and egg. I mean, if the companies invest more, the economy might grow faster, but they won't invest more unless the economy can be expected to grow faster. Now, how do we get the engine of growth going again?
Well, especially until we have some certainty around Eskom's ability to power that economic recovery. I mean, you can't expect firms to be investing for growth if there's no electricity to underpin that growth when the demand starts ratcheting up. So it really brings us full circle back to the heart of the issue is Eskom. Are you confident, following the sonar, that we're going to be able to solve this challenge expeditiously, Brian?
Now, just looking at it, why they blacked out now, browned out, is because really it looks like sort of low-level technical issues, like too much ash or whatever. It's not that we lack capacity to deliver electricity if we could manage it properly. So they've got to sort out the management problem. That doesn't seem to be like a major one. I mean, we have the Kusilis, we have the Medupis. We've invested billions and billions in additional capacity for which, in fact, there isn't demand. So it's not the demand is run well ahead of supply and you've got to play expensive catch-up. You've simply got to, as far as I read it, simply manage your resources capably, which seems to be the problem. The problem is simply low-level sort of management skills, the quality of your coal, the way you burn and so on. And that doesn't seem to me an overwhelming structural problem that you couldn't get right by just managing better. But so I think, again, there's more than Eskom at work here. Yeah, that's a supply-side problem. Eskom can't supply electricity, you can't supply goods and services. But there's also a huge demand-side problem in South Africa. I mean, we don't have enough spending. And my long-provided argument is the Reserve Bank has kept interest rates too high for far too long. We should have lower interest rates to encourage more households spending And if we have a bigger market, more spending by households, we'd encourage the firms to invest for a growing market. You can't have a growing economy unless household spending grows at 2 or 3% a year at worst. At the moment, it's hardly growing at 1% a year. There's no growth.
Mm.
So more than 60% of the economy starts with household spending. And the Reserve Bank, my argument is chasing a false theory about what matters. Inflation, when it's a problem, is a demand-side problem, too much demand. South Africa doesn't have too much demand. There's too little demand. And with a bit of help from the Reserve Bank, lower interest rates, we could get demand picking up momentum, which I think is essential to the purpose. ESCOM must deliver.
As you indicate, not insurmountable challenges if we can take the theme from the State of the Nation Address, which for me was back to basics, rolling up our sleeves and really just getting the job done, putting the right people in the right positions. And we've got more than enough of those capable people if we could just do away with things like cadre deployment and some of those patronage networks and some of the issues you've raised, Brian, then there could indeed be light at the end of a very dark tunnel. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have for tonight. Thanks, as always, for sharing your insights.